On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Is Jimmy Butler the best midseason acquisition of all time? And what is the best Jimmy Butler nickname? Also, why you and Shaq need to pay more attention to the Detroit Pistons. That and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh. That's Dan Devine. What's going on, Dan?
Tom, I'm doing great. How about yourself? Let's put up some numbers. Let's freaking go.
Yeah, let's go. We've got a good one. This one's going to be all about mistakes and mistakes in our lives that we're
finally, something I'm an expert in. This is great. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yes. We're talking about battles with yourself, but battles really that will help you win the war. You can check out Big Number every week on Thursdays coming out, YouTube, anywhere you got your podcast, just hit us with a 5-star review, please. I appreciate that. Anything less than 5, we will hunt you down, and it will be a mistake. We're going to be talking a lot about mistakes in this episode. So this week's Big Number is 63. As in, the Golden State Warriors have made 63 more free throws since Jimmy Butler was acquired than their opponent. 63 more free throws. That is number one in the NBA. 63 net free throws made. That is number one. And what's amazing about that, Dan, is that the Warriors were 27th in that same category before the trade. Before Jimmy Buckets was acquired, they were one of the 4 worst teams at getting to the free throw line and also fouling, and the net free throw attempts or net made free throws. They were a terrible free throw shooting team before Jimmy Butler, and they were like one of the worst teams in the NBA at this, and they are now the best since the Jimmy Butler acquisition. And secondly, 63 is a big number because the Warriors have 63 fewer turnovers than their opponents since the Jimmy Butler trade. And that also is number one in the NBA.
Wow.
They rank number one overall in net turnovers, number one overall in net free throws made since the acquisition. And Dan, this is why they got the guy. They want to limit their mistakes. The two things that Jimmy Butler does not do, he does not foul and he does not turn the ball over. And those are two things that the Warriors desperately needed before Jimmy Butler was acquired. And they now have the guy who might be the best guy at both of those skills, is limiting your mistakes of fouling dudes and forcing people to foul you. And then also coughing up the ball. He doesn't do that. And he also is one of the best steal guys in the NBA. So Dan, we all kind of need a Jimmy Butler in our life, right? To make us less mistake prone, right?
Pat Riley might disagree. There's some folks in South Florida who might have a different view, and also in other NBA locales. But listen, that's down the line. We're in the honeymoon phase of Jimmy Butler to the Bay. And where we are now is something that he said one of his years in Miami, stupidly locked in. He is stupidly locked in right now. And as a result, so are the Golden State Warriors. And I love your point. Like, I think one of the reasons why Jimmy maybe, there's this sort of thing that would happen with him every year where it's like, maybe he missed a bunch of games in the early part of the season, so he like didn't make the All-Star team or was like a fringe All-Star. Mm-hmm. But then by the end of the year, you're like, oh, he's got an unassailable All-NBA case and is one of the best players in the league in the playoffs. One of the things that's sort of like the quiet superpowers for him is he erases your, like he maximizes your margin for error by just cleaning up the dumb stuff. You turn the ball over less, you foul less, you generate more possessions than the other team, and you give yourself more bites at the apple. And that's like a quiet thing that's not a super highlight driven kind of game, but it's an always, it's like the metronomic consistency of right play, right play, right play over and over. And you stretch that over, you know, 100 possessions in a game, you stretch that over a month of basketball, and a team that looked kind of shaky or dead in the water can suddenly start looking like a contender. You've raised the possibility that Jimmy might need a mistake-based nickname.
Yes. Yeah. Jimmy mistakes. I don't like that. Not a fan of that.
Mistake. Double-edged sword. I mean, you know, it kind of works. It can work outside the honeymoon phase too.
Yeah. What about Mistake Lord? Like, we got Point God, Mistake God. I don't think these are working, but do you have any ideas? I just feel like Jimmy Buckets is kind of underselling what he's actually the best at.
Well, I mean, it's a shame because my favorite one is literally Jimmy. Like when Brett Brown was like, that wasn't Jimmy Butler on the phone. That was James Butler. Like saying like that, he was like, Butler. But then Jimmy's like, that's my name is literally Jimmy. It's not James. Like, so literally Jimmy is always my favorite one. He is exactly who he says he is. No more, no less. I got three pitches, mistake related pitches.
Okay.
I don't know if they're any good, but I had fun coming up with them at about 1 o'clock in the morning last night. Number one. The good editor, because he catches your mistakes and generates headlines.
Mm, yeah. So fact check, spell check. Like
that's right. The copy desk. Good.
I think Whiteout is not the right one.
No, that's not what
I was thinking.
No, it's not.
Whiteout would have been a reference that from our childhood. Probably a lot of people younger.
Liquid paper,
are you talking about? Also not the best nickname for Jimmy Butler. Do you have another one?
The Exorcist, because he takes care of all your possessions.
Okay, I like this one. I like Exorcist. All right, let's hear the third one.
All right, you got to
go with
me. He
makes everyone throw up after 3 years. Is that like screen puking?
Right, yeah. Right. On a long enough timeline, eventually his head starts spinning around 360 degrees, and pea soup starts shooting everywhere. Number three. All right, you got to go with me here.
Okay.
It's adult diapers. Because when the shit goes down, you're very glad he's there. So anyway, those are my mistake-based pitches.
This is what I'm going to do. All right. I'm really upset because I don't think the Warriors are playing the Blazers, but I might try to coin this on the broadcast with the Blazers. Hey, what a play by adult diapers. And Kevin Calabro is just going to be like, what is going on? Can the FCC just turn off this program, please?
Oh, man, Tom, don't lose your TV job because of my hilarious jokes. But all that said, we're having a lot of fun here on the Jimmy Butler nickname episode of The Big Number. The impact he has made, I mean, just on a basic level, right? They're 12-2 since Jimmy got to the Warriors.
Wait, hold on. Wasn't it the thing that he, pants? Sorry. So hold on. Was it that?
I completely forgot about that.
Yes. I don't know if we can confirm or deny this, but it was a thing like 2 weeks ago. Oh my, it has to be adult diapers. All right. You know what? It's
cool,
it's,
math podcast, think, Dan. Good job. Really done. Crushing it.
Is the podcast over? I think the podcast is over. We've done it.
Thanks so much, everybody. Like and subscribe.
Yeah. Thank you to our producers. They've already erased this episode. They're like, we cannot run any of this. Sorry, I cut you off once I realized that there was a controversy of Jimmy Buckets. Soiling himself in the middle of an NBA game. And it happened like 2 weeks ago. Okay.
It's all happening. God makes no mistakes. There are no coincidences. It's all coming together.
Today's big number is number two. All right, go on, Dan.
Oh, my goodness. Jimmy has, the Warriors are a night and day different team since Jimmy arrived. 12-2 since he got there. I think top five on both sides of the ball or close to it. They were a sort of destitute offense before he got there. Their defense has picked up. It just, everything makes more sense. And there was a great line he had after their win over the Knicks last week. And it was, everybody's always looking for me to be aggressive. Like I tell everybody, I can't help but to make the right play time and time and time again. I hope that is contagious. Just because the play's for you does not mean that's your shot. And that's where we've turned the corner on. And like, there are things that he says that sound like the least humble, most ridiculous thing anybody's ever said, where he's like, in the most humble way possible, I fit literally everywhere. I'm a good fit everywhere. And it's like, but this is why. Like, he doesn't need to dominate the ball. He doesn't need to dominate possessions. He doesn't need to have a bunch of plays run for him. He can handle or screen or be off the ball and cut. You can put him in the dunker spot. You can have him guard on the ball. You can have him be the low man helping into the paint. You can have him play zone up top or on the back line. You put him anywhere and he can contribute. And this is why we were so adamant, like, this is going to be the best guy you can get. If you can get this guy at the trade deadline, he will make the biggest impact of anybody that's available. And what we are seeing in this first month, you know, there's some caveats and we'll talk about them, but this is why Jimmy Butler is special. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's huge scoring numbers, but a lot of times it's just right play over and over and over again that results in the kind of numbers you're talking about, where all of a sudden you are net 63 in free throw attempts and turnovers in like a dozen games. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, they're 12-1 with Jimmy Butler in uniform, okay? And you might say small sample size, but like this is like we're in the territory of best trade midseason trade ever in NBA history. When you're talking about the in-season turnaround for the Warriors, and I think people are kind of forgetting how this team was so down before this trade and how bleak it looked in Warriors land. I'll give you an idea of this by looking at BetMGM, what their odds to win the championship were before the trade. They were plus 6,600 in February 1st before the trade deadline, according to BetMGM and sportsoddhistory.com, plus 6,600. That was 16th in the NBA, okay? Tied with the Philadelphia 76ers, okay? They weren't even a better odds to win the championship than half the league. And now they're tied for the sixth best in the NBA. So we're talking, I even shortchanged them. They have the fifth shortest odds to win the championship, plus 1,200, tied with the Denver Nuggets. They're now top five title contender in the NBA after this trade. That is absurd. And when you look at the teams that have made big swings at the trade deadline, they usually do not result in a championship. Why? Because great teams usually don't need a big makeover trade at the deadline. They usually stand pat. There's a few exceptions here. I would venture to say that Jimmy Butler, if the Warriors win the championship, it'll go down in history as the best midseason trade ever. The ranking is Rasheed Wallace. Rasheed Wallace in 2004 with the Detroit Pistons. They knock off Shaq and Kobe and Carl and GP in the 2004 NBA Finals, right? That's the bar. Jimmy Butler's averaging 31.8 minutes per game for the Warriors. That would be the most for any midseason acquisition for a championship team. Here are the other names on that list. Rasheed Wallace is at 30.6 with the Detroit Pistons in 2004. You have Marc Gasol in 2019.
That's what I was
he
go
averaged.
With, yeah.
Yep, 24.9 points, 24.9 minutes per game. You got PJ Tucker with the Milwaukee Bucks. He was acquired at the deadline, just a shade under 20 minutes per game. And then Nazi Muhammad with the Spurs and Channing Frye for the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers. So there's not many midseason acquisitions of this magnitude that result in an NBA Finals trip, but you can kind of see it now. The formula, the blueprint for Jimmy Butler, who's right now, over the last three seasons, he's averaging 20.8 points per game and 5 assists per game, and he's averaging 1.5 turnovers per game. Think about that. He's averaging 20-5 with just 1.5 turnovers per game. That is the fewest turnovers, fewest mistakes made by an offensive player while averaging 20-5. There's, I think, 24 NBA players over the last three seasons, minimum 100 games, that have averaged 20-5, and that is the fewest turnovers per game. And what's so funny about it is that the Blazers played the Warriors the other night, and I'm watching the game, and two things jumped out to me in the first quarter. One, Jimmy Butler, who doesn't make any mistakes, did the smartest thing possible. He got a foul in the opening minutes against Tomani Kamara, and that changed the entire complexion of the game. Like, you get a foul on Tomani, and the referees, Chauncey Billups, they've had meetings before every game, and Chauncey is like, dude, Tomani is physical, but what he does is not illegal. He is going to get it in you. He is going to be physical, but what he does is it's not illegal. And sure enough, Jimmy Butler's like, watch this. And he makes Tomani Kamara foul him like on the first play of the game. And I'm like, man, Jimmy Butler, that's what he does. It's not just that he's getting to the free throw line. It's that he's getting that foul on the guy who you do not want to get in foul trouble if you're the Blazers. So that was smart thing number one. Number two, Nate Duncan tweeted about it. If we could pull it up here, Nate Duncan had an observation that I didn't really quite put my finger on until he said it. And now it's just like, oh, I, like there's got to be some sort of yips or something with this that I know exactly what he's talking about, is Nate Duncan mentioned that Jimmy Butler, Warriors fans will soon come to understand that Jimmy Butler is absolutely terrified to shoot a contested layup unless he knows he can get fouled. This is chess, not checkers. There was a play where the Warriors had an offensive, had a fast break, and Jimmy Butler got an wide open layup, just easy open layup. And here comes Shaedon Sharpe, the guy with the highest vert in the NBA, the guy that just destroyed Julian Champagne, who, like, it was, my opinion, the best dunk of the year. And Jimmy Butler's going up, and he, like, forgets. I don't know what to do. And he drops the ball. He gets called for a double dribble. And it was in the opening minutes of the game. And that's the only thing. That's the only thing that I can point to besides like how he kind of combusts like 2-3 years into it, anywhere he goes. But it's the only thing that I can point to where it's like, oh, he's mistake free. He's adult diapers. But every once in a while, it will leak through.
There, listen, who among us has not had some leakage at one point or another, Tom? I think the general feeling, though, is that the early returns on Jimmy are pretty tremendous, not least of, I mean, some of it's because of the individual production he's had, but also the impact that has had what more broadly on the Warriors. And maybe we can get into that a little bit.
I think we should. Four little numbers. We'll talk about them with Dan Devine coming up right after the break. All right, Jimmy mistakes, no, scratch that. Adult diapers, four little numbers talking about the impact of Jimmy Butler on the Warriors. What's your first little number, Dan?
First little number is 68.9. That is Stephen Curry's true shooting percentage in the 14 games since Jimmy Butler's debut in Golden State. If that sounds high, it's because it is. We've referenced true shooting percentage before. It's a stat that kind of rolls up your accuracy on two-point shots, three-point shots, and free throws. We just talked about free throws being a huge part of the Warriors' success since Jimmy got here. 68.9 is higher than the two-time Steph led the league in true shooting back in 2015-16 and 2017-18. So he is converting his points more efficiently in this stretch than he did when he was either the MVP of the league unanimously or playing next to Kevin Durant. So pretty good stretch in terms of his offensive efficiency here. He's on an absolute heater. He's averaging 29.9 points per game since Jimmy's arrival. That's second in the NBA only to SGA. And four of Steph's eight highest scoring games of the season have come since Jimmy came aboard, including the two highest, the 56-point explosion in Orlando and the 40-point game that he had in Brooklyn. So I'm asking you, is this just sort of time, you know, right time, right place, weather starts to get warmer, Steph starts to heat up, or is there something about the addition of Jimmy that is helping to spark this latest Steph surge?
Yeah, when you look at Steph Curry, you're like, this dude is turning 37 this week, and he's doing this. 70%, essentially, 70% true shooting percentage. The way you can think of it is, he's so efficient that it's as if he's shooting 70% on twos every time he shoots the ball.
Which is bonkers. Like,
it's nuts. It's nuts. He's 37 and he's got a 70% true shooting percentage basically with Jimmy Butler on board. And I think the big thing here is they're just getting started. Like the same thing with Luka and like that Austin Reeves pass. There's a paper that went out on the Sloan conference, like it was presented at Sloan this year. I was not there, Dan. I presume you were not at Sloan this year.
I have not been for a little bit. Yeah,
we had Ben Alomar, who the former director of analytics at ESPN, good friend of the program. He's been the director of analytics for several teams, both NBA and NFL. He's been a sports analytics consultant to the Stars. He came on Basketball Illuminati this week to present his paper to us, you know, because when you think Illuminati, you think MIT Sloan Analytics Conference. It's
right.
A similar overlap. If you do the Venn diagram, it's the same audience. He presented a paper at Sloan with Dean Oliver, the godfather of basketball analytics, who wrote Basketball on Paper and also has a book Beyond Basketball on Paper, which you should check out as well. They presented a study that looked at chemistry among teammates through catch and shoot passes. And they found out that after 50 catch and shoot passes, you see a marked increase in the recipient's shooting percentages. And there is evidence of chemistry getting better and better as the more that they play together and the more passes they have together. And there's just this like synergy that starts to happen. This like this thing that we all feel on the basketball court, but can't really quantify. They're quantifying it now that it will increase as much as 50%. They looked at Chris Paul and some of his teammates. And when they get to like the first 50 attempts together with his teammates, it's like 0.8 points per possession. And by the 200th, it's 1.2. So it increases by 50%. Wow. And that is like universally across all players that you see this effect. So applying this to Jimmy Butler, when he passes to Stephen Curry, he's already shooting 41% on those shots, on those threes. What happens when they're in the playoffs this year and next year, the kind of chemistry and synergy that they're going to have, if they're already, the benchmark is 41% three-point shooting percentage, and there is studies to show that it does increase over time, and it also is a reason why you might want to extend this guy another year, which they did already, is like basically say, look, we want Jimmy Butler for year two and three because, hey, he will actually have another training camp with Draymond and Steph Curry, and we might actually get better. Now, granted, 37 years old for Steph this week, 35 years old for Draymond, 35 years old for Jimmy Butler. That's the thing that worries me, is the same thing with the Kyrie thing, is like,
sure,
these guys are getting up there in age. So hopefully, for everybody's sake, we can see this beautiful basketball only get better. I don't think the Thunder fans want to hear that, or the Lakers fans want to hear that, but I do think that stat you just mentioned has a chance to get even better.
It very well might. One quick note on that is, you know, you mentioned the kinds of fouls Jimmy's drawing, right? Like he gets that one on Kamara at the opening minutes of the game. Another sort of quiet superpower, you start drawing those fouls, you get into the bonus faster, right? You get it to where every foul, you're shooting free throws. Steph Curry, before Jimmy got there, was shooting, I think, 3.4 free throw attempts a game. That's up to 6.5 since he got there. So Jimmy gets you in the bonus earlier, and then every time Steph gets hit, he's going to the line and he's shooting 94%. So like, again, these are the quiet, like, here's a point here or a point there, and then it adds up. So the impact could certainly only get bigger. Speaking of big impact, second little number is +17.2. That's the Warriors' net rating when Jimmy's on the floor and Steph is off of it, according to Cleaning the Glass. Again, if +17.2 sounds big, it's because it is. This means that in non-garbage time situations, so competitive portions of the game, when Jimmy's on the floor and Steph isn't, Golden State is blowing teams out by 17.2 points per 100 possessions. That's really notable because for the last six seasons, including earlier this season before Jimmy got here, the Warriors were losing those Steph minutes, sometimes by a little, sometimes by a lot. Basically, since Kevin Durant left, the Warriors have had no answer for how to be good in the non-Steph minutes. Jimmy Butler is providing that answer. How important is it for Golden State to finally have an answer to that question?
Yeah, it might be the most important thing, because we know that as long as Steph is on the floor, we did a whole podcast about this earlier in the year, that the Steph minutes were at about 120 offensive rating, which is absurd. And they're getting back to that mark. It was not great in the post Buddy Hield's. Remember this, what was it?
The Splash Buddies. Yeah, of course.
Splash Buddies. The Splash Buddies. Maybe the second best nickname we've come up with on this referenced in this episode. Well, the Splash Buddies, actually, it was the Desert Buddies for a while. But now they're getting back up to there with Jimmy Butler. I would also point out that like this is kind of threading the needle, is getting Jimmy Butler at this stage, not just for Steph, but also to relieve Steph of having to play 40 minutes a night, especially in the postseason opening rounds. We had the over-under at 2.5 rounds, Dan. I didn't feel good about that earlier this year. Like, we both took the over at 2.5 rounds for the Warriors to win. And we both took the over, which means that we were predicting they were going to get the Western Conference Finals. I kind of feel like Jimmy Butler is giving them that chance right now. Is because of that little number you just said, is +17 when Steph is not on the floor. That is the stuff of Western Conference finalists. What's your next number?
third little number is 94.2. That is the defensive rating of the Warriors' new small ball starting lineup, where Steph and Jimmy play alongside Draymond Green at center, Moses Moody on the wing, and Brandon Pajemski next to Steph in the backcourt. Among 124 five-man units that have played at least 75 minutes together this season, that's the eighth lowest defensive rating, 94.2 points per 100 possessions allowed. It's really, really good. That lineup is holding opponents to below 45% shooting from the field. It's forcing turnovers like crazy, clamping down at an elite level, despite not having a single guy in that starting five over 6'7". That's small sample size caveat applies. And, you know, we've talked a little bit too, like, they haven't exactly been beaten up on a murderer's row of opponents. They've only, I think, six of their 12 wins in the stretch have come against teams over 500. And four of them were teams, you know, like Bucks didn't have Giannis, Dallas didn't have any of its centers, stuff like that. So like mitigated, you know, above 500 teams. But so there's, I think the big question there is like, this has looked really good, and we know how good and how important small ball has been for the Warriors. The Draymond at Green, Draymond at five, death lineups of years gone by. Do you have any skepticism about their ability to kind of keep that up with these guys at this age in this sort of formula and defend the way they would need to get, make, you know, make it to that second, third round of the playoffs? Or do you feel like what we're seeing in this last month and a half or so is something that can you know, hold up into the postseason?
There's this subtle like trend that's happening across the league where teams aren't really, they're going small with charge takers rather than rim protectors or shot blockers. And Pods and Draymond are two of the top seven charge takers in the NBA. And the rest of the list is like Tomani Kamara and then like the whole OKC roster. The Thunder are like, we're gonna deter guys from driving into the paint by stepping up and taking so many charges that you're going to get so frustrated that you're just not going to come into the paint anymore. And if you look at the Thunder and their paint points allowed, it's like nothing. And it's not even just Hartenstein or Chet Holmgren. They were out for big chunks of the season. They just prevent a lot of paint attacks, even though they don't have a huge lineup, because of that rim protection in the form of guys taking charges in Pods. I think it's third in the NBA or fourth in the NBA in charges taken. Draymond's right there. So there are ways that you can play big without actually being big. And the Warriors are doing that with this lineup. And Jimmy Butler's just so smart defensively. You get Draymond and Jimmy on a back line, they play so big. They wall up so well. And so even though they're not tall, they play tall in many ways.
And there's also the component of like two guys that smart and that versatile who can guard every, you know, all five positions, like they're, and two of the best off-ball defenders in the world, right? Like if you see a mistake up top, you cover it on the back end. You combine that with Moses Moody, who's been playing great since he's gotten the opportunity to step into starting lineup minutes, and, you know, a big, long playoff length physical defender. Steph obviously is always going to be somebody that gets hunted, but he's gotten a lot stronger over the years. Pajemski is a real active and sort of disruptive defender, tons of deflections. I think it'll be interesting to see, depending on matchups, like they've gotten a lot out of Quentin Post and obviously more on the offensive end as a stretch five, but he does have legit 7-footer size. And then there's this other thing, and this brings us to our fourth little number, 0.400. So 0.400. That is the free throw attempt rate this season of Jonathan Kuminga. Jonathan Kuminga is bigger than 6'7", but we haven't seen him in a little bit. Jonathan Kuminga, so 400, his free throw attempt rate. That was the highest on the Warriors until Jimmy got to town. I think Jimmy's is like 671. But it was also a top 10 mark in the entire league among non-centers, Kuminga's 0.400. He hasn't played since spraining his right ankle on January 4th, but ESPN's Shams Charania reported that Kuminga plans to return against the Kings on Thursday, his first action in more than 2 months. He comes back to a team that is dramatically different than when he left. When he was out, before he went out, he was averaging like 20 points and six rebounds a game. Steve Kerr was saying, like, he's playing the best ball of his career right now. They were operating through him on the offensive end as a starter in the starting lineup. Whether, you know, now it's TBD as far as where, you know, how he sort of gets in, where he fits in. I'm curious, what do you think the reintegration or the addition of Kuminga into this mix that the Warriors have found sort of means as they try to figure it out going into the postseason?
You sent this like clip from Steve Kerr talking to the local San Francisco radio, and it is that's a tough listen if you're Jonathan Kuminga or his camp. It is not great. He says, we're going to run through Jimmy Butler and we're going to run through Stephen Curry. This is literally like a question about Jonathan Kuminga. And he's like, we're going to run through Jimmy. We're going to run through Steph. So what that requires of Jonathan Kuminga is to be settling into a role to support those guys. And that's slightly different. And that's just something that he has to adapt to. Support. Settling into a role, adapt. Ooh, those are some buzzwords there, which is basically like, we are gonna, you know, keep you on the bench for a while. I wouldn't be surprised if Jonathan Kuminga is like starting a couple of these games in the way that experimentation in the last month of the season, you want to kind of see Jimmy Butler and Kuminga, what happens when they're on the floor together. Let's see it before the games matter that much more in the playoffs. I just feel like Kuminga played because they had to. They were short guys. They needed some sort of production, some sort of injection of athleticism. And he provided that in a time where it was dire need. But once you bring in Jimmy Butler, you don't need that guy anymore as much. So I think Kuminga is going to be a fascinating subplot, especially a guy who wants to get paid. We've seen with Draymond Green, what happens when someone wants to get paid? It kind of creates some fractures in the team sometimes. I don't know if that's going to happen in this case. Hopefully Draymond Green won't resort to that. But Jonathan Kuminga wants to get paid, obviously, coming up on his extension. And he might not get the oxygen he wants because now they got Jimmy Butler. So there is kind of this little subplot to watch is how they're going to integrate. Requiring him to settle into a role to support and slightly different. And it's just something that he has to adapt to, integrate with this Jimmy Butler edition of the Warriors. Kuminga, that is quite the story.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that even without him, Kerr's still been going 10 deep and now that you're adding 11th and you're already slicing the minutes pretty thin, it's going to be tricky to find the role, but listen, let's chalk this up to being one of those good problems that, you know, you get another injection of athleticism and talent and, you know, if he's on board to play a role, he could wind up making a contribution. But the fact that this matters, the fact that you're like, oh, is this going to upset the apple cart as we go for, you know, try to get into the 5 seed or try to, you know, be able to push deep into the postseason. This is the kind of problems that the Warriors did not necessarily think they were going to have a month ago. And I think the fact that they're there now is just a testament to how big an impact and how big a difference Jimmy Butler has made since he showed up.
Yeah, I'm excited for this Thursday night matchup between the Warriors and the Kings. They've had a lot of battles in the playoffs before recently, and there's no De'Aaron Fox, but there is Zach LaVine and Sabonis. Don't know what his status is going to be, but a lot of bad blood between these two organizations that are just up the road from each other. So I can't wait. The Jimmy Butler era is off to a rousing start, and it's I think the rest of the league is having to put on some adult diapers. When they have to play these guys. So we're going to talk about another clip. We just talked about Steve Kerr's clip. That was pretty funny to listen to. Not funny if you're Jonathan Kuminga, but entertaining, not the least. This is an interesting time if you're a Pistons fan. We're going to talk about the Pistons and Shaq and that quote, that clip. Coming up after the break, we'll also get into the over-unders and give a little quick update on that after these messages. All right, Jimmy Butler plus 63 in the net free throws since the Warriors are plus 63, best in the NBA in the free throw column, best in the NBA in the turnover column. They're winning both of those battles, which is why they're 12-1 with Jimmy Butler in uniform, 12-2 overall since he debuted. Warriors are really good. You know who's also a really good team lately is the Detroit Pistons. We are going to talk about them in a second. Just real quick, Dan. The scoreboard, our over-unders that we did earlier this season and we've been tracking throughout the year, it's still tied 17-17. Isaiah Hartenstein and Zach Edey, their free throw and their three-pointers, it's going to come down to the last minute. Like, it really is going to come down to the last game, whoever wins that. A very important over-under scoreboard. And the Warriors making it past the Western Conference semis will decide
we're gonna have to keep an eye on that.
So I know everyone's on pins and needles about that. So let's talk about the Pistons. Okay. I got a chance to watch them up close. Again, the Blazers broadcast, they played the other night. It was awesome. Awesome basketball. It was also late at night. I think it was on Friday. Or was it Saturday night? I don't know. The point is, this was a game that only junkies are going to watch. It's two teams that don't have an MVP candidate on it. They weren't very good last year. This year, they're up and coming. They're doing a great job. And it was great basketball. It was really fun. Tamani Kamara, Cade Cunningham, Malik Beasley, Anfernee Simons going at it down the stretch. And it was all feel good. I feel really good about Pistons fans. And then Shaq. Yeah. Shaq had some comments on Tuesday night about the Pistons coached by. Well, let's find out.
I will be interested. You said something very interesting about Cade Cunningham. Great player now at this stage. He plays at his own pace. Anybody that can consistently play at their own pace and put up numbers, it's a great player. I like the way he's playing. I like what Chauncey is doing. Those guys play hard. My favorite player on that team is Isaiah Stewart. Big body, hard guy. Like to knock people out, push people
around. No, I can't let this go. Like who? Who's doing it? You said Chauncey?
Chauncey's the coach, right?
Okay.
Portland.
No.
Chauncey,
I can't let this go.
JB Bickerstaff.
That's what I mean. Hey, you know, first of all, I don't watch Detroit. How about that, boo-boo? I don't watch him. I messed up. I made a mistake.
I love that. That he says, hey, I don't watch them, so take that, boom, boom. It's great. It's just digging yourself further, Shaq. Hey, you know what? I think we're just blowing right past the fact that he called Cade Cunningham Cade Dillingham. Dan, did you catch that?
Well, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say maybe it was just that was like a kind of like quick, you know, quick speech, not impediment, but it's like a little, we all make mistakes. We've listened to this episode's been about mistakes. That one, I can, there's a ham involved. I get it. You know, it rhymes. But the part where he had the wrong coach of the team.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe so we can even extend the benefit of that if we want to and say maybe he was also one of the sickos watching the Friday night Pistons Blazers game and he saw Chauncey there and just conflated the two. Maybe that's what happened.
They played together, by the way. JB Bickerstaff and Chauncey Billups grew up in Denver and played against each other. And they were like boys back in the day. And wow. They're close buddies. So maybe that Shaq should have just gone with that. He's like, oh, you know, I was just watching this segment about how they're boys from back in the day. I just missed it up. You know what? It's just the 2004 Pistons. Once again, we talked about Rasheed Wallace being the best trade acquisition, midseason trade acquisition for a champion. Maybe this is just the haunt of the 2004 Pistons is that like they are continuing to haunt Shaquille O'Neal in 2025. The Pistons, they're going to point to this clip as an underdog, a Red Sox fan before they became insufferable to a lot of fan bases. I would always feel like the national bias was against the Red Sox and always for Derek Jeter and the New York Yankees, the true Yankees over there. And I went to Wake Forest. Always felt like there was a bias against, Duke and Carolina. I get it. If you're the Pistons and you're looking at Shaq doing this, this has got to just make your blood boil. But it also kind of makes you feel like, you know what? This is proof that they don't watch us, that they literally don't watch us. And Shaq is admittedly saying, I don't watch them. And he's beating his chest over it, which is, this is where we're at. You know, I said this, I think, a couple weeks ago. Maybe I said it with KOC, is I think NBC and Amazon, them having games, national games, is going to be great. Rising tide floats all boats. The competition is going to be great for everyone. I think it's going to make everybody sharper. I think it's going to make it more entertaining. And I do hope that we have fewer times where we're getting maybe the best story in basketball, the Detroit Pistons going from the worst basketball team over the last couple of years and just the sorry state of the franchise. The turnaround that they've had has been fantastic and it should be praised rather than like Shaq is gleefully bragging that he doesn't watch the Pistons. And yeah. he it's just like, oh, And look, it's Shaq. He's funny. He's on Inside the NBA. It's a great program, entertaining program. But I do think we can be of two minds. One, it is an entertaining show and makes me laugh every time I watch. And two, I think it would be better if they watched NBA games.
I think that's a good way to approach it. Like, if you're going to be on the national broadcasts of games and like essentially ambassador for the league, and like one of the most prominent, loudest voices covering it, knowing who the players and coaches are and watching them play to be able to comment about them is a good starting point. But also here at The Big Number, where we like to give actionable information to our listeners and to our viewers on YouTube. So if you too have not watched very much of the Pistons, here's some stuff you should know about them. They have the same record as the Celtics since mid-December. They're 27-13 since December 15th. Since the beginning of February, they have the best net rating of any team besides the Cavs and Thunder. They've been really legitimately good. Top 10 offense, top 5 defense. Again, going back half the season since the middle of December. Cade Cunningham finally getting some of those like American Luka comps, actually like giving some credence to them. Probably going to be on an All-NBA team, or certainly has an argument to be there. Asar Thompson, he's not a Men Thompson, but he's an absolute menace. He got into the starting lineup in the beginning of January, and the numbers are nuts. Like 16 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals and blocks, 6 deflections per 36. Like he's everywhere. He guards everybody. But the number one thing you need to know about the Detroit Pistons is that when Malik Beasley...
Is that
Beasley,
coached by J.B. Bickerstaff?
Yes, that's a really good point. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's make sure we're very clear that Chauncey Billups is not the head coach of the Detroit Pistons. Outside of that, the number two thing, big number number two, is that Malik Beasley, when he makes a three-pointer, does a little shimmy. And this is important because Malik Beasley has gotten to make that little shimmy 259 times this year because he leads the NBA in made three-pointers. The other night, he hit a buzzer-beating three at the end of the third quarter and then turned around directly in the face of the opposing bench and did his little hip wiggle shimmy. And it was wonderful. I was watching the game with my kids. This morning, my 7-year-old daughter was like, "Hey, Dad, check this out." And she did the Malik Beasley hip swivel shimmy. And I was like, well, there's no better way to indicate that you're breaking through, that you're crossing over, you're providing something of value and entertainment for the populace than that a child who does not know from Detroit Pistons basketball can watch them, be like, that shot was awesome, and that guy did a cool dance. Like,
okay,
there's something to love everywhere, guys. You just got to actually watch it to see it.
Okay. Top 5 shimmies in NBA history. We'll go Dan Devine's child.
That's okay, right.
Number one, mimicking Malik Beasley. I'm going to go with number two, Antoine Walker. Why does he take so many threes? Because there are no fours. With the Miami Heat when he did the shimmy after the foul. Or charge. I think it was a charge he took. That's number two. And then, of course, Steph. What about Chris? Does Chris Paul get on there for mimicking Steph's shimmy in front of Steph's face? Or the fact that they lost that series, now it kind of lives in infamy.
I think it lives in infamy, but I do have an alt here. I have an alternate pitch. With Stephen Curry, you cannot respect the butterfly and hate on the caterpillar. Mark Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, we got to go back to his shimmy, which was a loathsome thing for me in my youth because I'm thinking about him on the Indiana Pacers, taking out those Knicks teams and, you know, going, doing battle with them. But there was a lot of deep shoulder action in his shimmy. Yes. And I think from an aesthetic level, it laid the groundwork for some of what was to come, including from Stephen Curry, whom Jackson famously coached before he didn't coach him anymore. So I think the point is, long storied history of great shimmying in NBA basketball. Malik Beasley is keeping that up. He's expanding it. He's extending it. JB Bickerstaff would really like for him to get back on defense instead of doing that. But sometimes you just got to let him know. You got to swag it out a little bit. The Pistons are doing this, guys. They are worth watching. And if you're somebody who talks about this stuff, they're really worth watching for you because guess what? They're going to the playoffs and you're going to be seeing them in the beginning of April. So you better be ready for it.
I love Shaq. He blessed me, baptized me with a nickname, Mr. Statistician Face Man.
That's right.
I'm carrying that nickname to my grave. So thank you to Shaq for that. You know what? I'm going to make a prediction right here, Dan. I'm going to make a prediction that we are going to get Shimmy Butler. at some time this postseason, he's going to hit a great shot at the end of the game, and he is going to shimmy down the floor with Stephen Curry, and we're going to call him Shimmy Butler this postseason. It's going to happen, as well as making Fetch happen with adult diapers. Adult diapers, we're going to make happen right here on The Big Number. Dan, that was a great episode. I'm so excited. We did this on Jimmy Butler and the Warriors, plus 63. The net free throws, net turnovers on the Warriors. They're doing great ahead of Thursday night matchup. Can't wait to see what happens next on TNT. Dan, I want to thank you, and I want to thank everybody behind the scenes at Yahoo Sports. Thank you to Emmy Stone and the entire team that works hard on this podcast, making it a reality. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Subscribe to The Big Number wherever you get your podcasts, and definitely listen back to last week's episode. We did it on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, and our fake award ballot preview a month before the season ends. Lots of great talk. Jokic had an amazing game, and Dan, you're absolutely right. That dude, as deserving as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is in the MVP race. And you had some amazing numbers about Jokic. So definitely check that out last week on The Big Number, and definitely subscribe. We'll be back with another episode next week of The Big Number. And until then, take care of yourselves. And I'm trying to think of a diaper pun here, but I'm gonna steer away. I'm not going to do it. Have a great, great weekend, everybody. Sorry. Don't soil yourselves is what I'm trying to say. All right.